I'm Cherry Gregg, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. For more than a decade, journalist Helen Ubiñas told Philadelphia's stories with urgency, honesty, and heart, covering gun violence, politics, and injustice with a voice that cut through the noise. She was the only Latina columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News. And whether she was in the newsroom, at a community meeting, or at a crime scene, Helen's reporting felt personal. And now she's stepping away from the paper, but definitely not from the work. And she accepted our humble request for her to drop in for an exit interview. Helen, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you very, very much.
So I want to go back to the beginning. When you came to Philly, you diagnosed Philly pretty quickly. Yeah. And you wrote that Philly Shrug column. People were mad.
So mad.
Mad at you. And actually, I think that's kind of cool. Because when Philly get mad at you, that says a lot, right?
Yeah.
But what did you see about Philadelphia that made you say, so quickly, that's it?
I saw a lot of potential. And I saw a lot of people who were willing to accept or got used to accepting, you know, sort of mediocrity and being like, you know what? And I lost count of the times that people said, you know, that's just how Philly is.
And that's the Philly shrug.
Oh, and I do not do well with that, where people are like, you know, that's just the way it is. It is what it is. I'm like, no, it ain't. And it doesn't have to be. So let's get this straight. So that's the kind of stuff that would drive me nuts, from little things like being on the train, walking down the street, talking to people, whether I'm talking to, you know, just somebody in a neighborhood or public officials. There was too much of that. And I just didn't know enough not to keep my mouth shut, which is basically like, you know, the blessing and the curse of Helen, I guess. And I was just like, wait. This shouldn't be this way. And what we're going to do first is point out the issue. And so that's where things got sort of like hinky. People were like, who does this New Yorican newbie think she is to tell us how we're about to do this and that, you know? And then I think I followed that pretty closely with like, you know what we should do? We should rename the Italian Market. And people were like, oh my God, send her back.
Where did that come from though, Helen? For people who don't know, you grew up in the Bronx, but it's like, where did you get that, let me tell you what you should be doing kind of attitude?
Well, part of it is being the middle daughter, right, of strong Puerto Rican parents. So you have to sort of set yourself, you know, the oldest is the queen and the, you know, and then the youngest is the youngest and everybody loves her. And the middle has to make herself known. And that was by speaking, by opening my mouth, by pointing things out, by pushing the envelope. And so that's part of it. But also I have my friends, people who know me the most, my friends, my husband will say that I have sort of an outsized, probably not healthy sort of way of looking at inequity and unfairness. It drives me crazy, especially when I'm just like, well, that's unfair. We all know that's unfair. So what are we going to do about it? We're not just going to sit here and be like, yeah, it's unfair. Life's unfair. I'm like, well, let's try to make it a little more fair. And I think those two things mixed together with my like love of writing and journalism, it's like the perfect storm for me to sort of like, oh, I can try to sort of push the envelope. I can try to push people to like, let's be better for each other. So
you've been here, you've been in Philadelphia more than a decade at this point.
Yeah, I got here in 2011. I started working at the Daily News in 2012, I believe.
So you're like 14 years in. You're a Philadelphian in some way. I know you still claim the Bronx, but
I claim the Bronx, and also I would never be so bold as to say I'm a Philadelphian because, like, the real Philadelphians would be like, "How dare you?"
That's humble. I like the humbleness.
Yeah.
You know, what did the city sort of teach you? Because you came in here, you diagnosed the city. Did your ideas of Philly sort of change from this initial diagnosis?
This is going to age me. You know, like real, recognize real. I know I'm 100 years old, but it didn't take Philadelphians long to realize, like, you know, she's imperfect. Sometimes she's crazy. She comes out with some stuff like renaming the Italian Market or Philly Shrug. How dare she? But I hope that over time I proved that I meant well, that I wanted the best for this city, that I saw so much potential in this city and knew that it could be so much better. Like, the people deserve so much better. We have, I mean, it's the people, right? Like, I'm walking away from the Inquirer, and what I'm really, really going to miss are these daily conversations I'd have with the people in Philadelphia. And they would always surprise me and, you know, school me, and they were endearing, and they used to drive me crazy and still do. It's not like I'm gone. But they really did teach me that if you come in with an open heart, with some integrity, and a real desire to try to help make life better for all of us, the Philly's going to be like, all right, well, you know, we won't kick you out just yet. So, yeah. They love me 1 week. They're like, I totally love that column. I totally. And then I'll say something about somebody that maybe they like or love. And they're just like, I can't believe it. But they still respect the work that you do and the effort that you put in.
Was there ever another time where you thought, you know what, now is the time, or maybe I should leave? Or has there ever been a time where you thought you should leave, but then you got sucked right back in?
I mean, first of all, like everybody, we all work, right? There's days where we're like, we're done.
I'm out.
Peace out. You know, because there's something annoyed you that day or that week or whatever. But there were moments where I thought, like, I wonder if I did all I could here, right? For now.
Yeah.
Right? I've pushed on the human toll of gun violence, making sure that our public officials are held accountable. Like, you know, I've done all these things. I'm just like, well, you could keep doing that. But maybe it's time to take these lessons somewhere else and elevate all this, right? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I start calling people to, for example, I start calling people to art museum steps to, you know, against gun violence, and they show up. And I'm like, if they show up, I'm showing up. So how can you walk away, even if the voice is telling you, like, I feel like you might be close to, like, maybe, like, needing to move on. Mm-hmm. They show up. They read me, and they ask for my help. And they don't just ask for my help. They show up for each other. This is a very difficult job to walk away from. I am not retiring. I'm staying in journalism. But this particular job was very hard to walk away from. Yeah. And I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it on a bunch of levels, right? One of the big sort of reasons I'm going to miss it is because I was the only Latina columnist at my first paper, The Hartford Current. They never got another one.
Wow.
And I hope that that's not what's going to happen here. While it's very important that, you know, there's a lot of Latina journalists, a lot of Latina reporters in newsroom, not as many as there should be. And I'm talking about newsrooms all over the country, nationally. Mm-hmm. There are not enough Latina columnists.
Yeah.
And that matters because it helps your community, your world sort of make sense of the news, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we have all these challenges already with just, you know, the news world is in trouble. It's in chaos. I don't have to tell you, right?
Yeah. I'm living it every
day.
This
is a crisis, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I always said you really walk away when you turn around and you see a whole bunch of you there, you know, young Latinas, Latinos coming up, you know, reporters and
you're
columnists.
Like, it's in good hands. It's in good hands.
And it's in good hands in a lot of ways, but there are still not enough of us, which is why it made the decision, one, hard, and two, why I started something like the Enya Fund for Latinas in Journalism, right? Because I wanted to not just be pointing out, like, hey, newsrooms all over the place, we have to do better in terms of representation or respect. I wanted to put my own money, you know, where my mouth is. I wanted to sort of do something about it. So,
yeah, you always have this way of, like, putting skin in the game.
Yes.
And that's what I think really struck me about how you do your job, especially when I think about how you covered gun violence. I mean, you didn't just cover the deaths. You covered the trauma. You covered the loss. You also covered people sort of dealing with the everyday struggles of being a survivor.
Right.
When you look at all that you've done, is there, you know, and you think about this issue of gun violence, why do you think it sort of hit you so personally? I mean, are you a survivor? Like, tell me what about gun violence made you take it so personally?
I'm not a survivor. You know, I grew up in New York, a lot of neighborhoods in the Bronx. I saw a lot of the things, you know, not to the same extent that I write about. People that I loved, friends, sort of experienced some of the things, not to the extent often, but that I write about. The neighborhoods in Philadelphia, some of the neighborhoods in Philadelphia remind me very much of neighborhoods that I grew up in and neighborhoods that my cousins grew up in, that my, you know, that their children grew up in and some still live in. But I always wanted to make sure that it didn't feel like I was showing up, knocking on your door and asking you to give me something, meaning like, give me a story, you know, open up that wound, that trauma. And I just got to walk away. And that was that, you know, I didn't mean to sort of have these, like, you know, these
relationships,
but I did, you know, but I have a real problem as a reporter, as a journalist, as a New Yorker, as a Latina, as somebody that looks like me in a field that does not, that often doesn't look or feel like me. I have a real problem asking people, especially at their worst hour, for something and then walking away and just being like, yeah, thanks. You know, even if you mean well, what right do we have to just do that, to just take? So I never wanted to just take. I never wanted it to feel transactional. I wanted to know what happened when everybody else left. I wanted not just what happened, right? But I wanted to see, like, is there something I can do to make this a little bit better for this person or this family or this community? And so I would always show back up. I think that that's sort of what I do. I show up and then I show up and then I stick around and then I show up, you know. And some might think like, oh, gosh, she's writing the same stories over and over again. But that's not it. No. You're showing this person in this neighborhood, in this community, the respect of seeing it through. I think seeing it through is the very least we can do for people.
Yeah. And that, and you're like really touching me because that was always my approach to journalism as well. Just keep popping up. They were like, oh, nothing bad happened. You here? Yeah. Because it's a Black party and I want to talk about the good stuff too.
Right.
You know,
well, because there's a lot of joy, right?
Yes.
In our city.
Yes.
It's
absolutely.
Not just like, look, it's really, really important to tell the stories that you've told, that I've told, that you tell, and I tell all these stories that are, you know, I know that the numbers of shootings and homicides are down now, and that's great. That's cause for some celebration. But the fact of the matter is that that does not negate everything that came before. Mm-hmm. And even if the number is small, all the families that are still being affected, right? So all these stories have to be told, like, you know, what some people might view as the bad stories. But there's a lot of great stories out there. There's a lot of happiness and grit and community. And I say that, and I'm thinking about more the community. In terms of, like, public officials and all that stuff, we have to keep our foot on the gas.
Yeah.
You know, if we like one administration more than another, if we're like rooting for one administration over another, we have to sort of tell the truth. We have to sort of show up. We can't be holding a mirror to the city, right? We can't be like, oh, we hold the mirror to the city when we're like polishing it up for them. Like, no. Like, we have to show up and be like, this part's not great.
Yeah.
And that's not to trash the city. Mm-hmm. That's to tell the truth and be like, how can we do better? Like, I expect better from you. So that's why I'm telling you what you did there. That wasn't good. That wasn't good.
And you said that's not hate. That's love.
That's absolutely love. Because if you hate something or you are indifferent, what do you care if somebody said something out of pocket or somebody said something weird or somebody said that they were going to do something? And then because I'm very much of the, oh, you said on day one you were going to do X, Y, and Z. You barely did Z. Where's X, Y? Right?
Yeah, we still waiting.
Right. And that's not hate. That's like, I want us to succeed. And for us to succeed, I have to do my part, my job. And that's to hold you accountable.
Yeah. But covering gun violence, Helen, that's a hard beat.
It is.
Sis, that's a hard, hard beat.
Yeah.
I mean, and you've covered it not just in Philly, but other places as well.
In Hartford.
And so it's just like, how are you able to keep this up and not get totally burnt out? I mean, just emotionally. I mean, you watch people you've grown relationships with be lost. Because in a way that you, it does affect you.
Well, so, you know, I just recently, like, I wrote about it in my column about Azeer Harris, a young man who just had his whole life ahead of him. He had already been shot and paralyzed. He was one of the young men who would show up to some of the meetings that we had when we started a support group for paralyzed gunshot victims. And he was, you know, just somebody that I would pop up. He's got amazing parents, Troy and Deb Harris, amazing parents, a great family. And I was rooting for this kid. And, you know, he recently was shot and killed during one of those high-profile shootings, you know, where a lot of people were shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Azeer Harris was one of the ones that was shot and killed. And I'm going to tell you, not that I don't want to over-dramatize anything.
Yeah.
Not that that was the reason that I decided, oh, like, the voice got bigger. It's like time to, like, you know, maybe walk away for now. That's not it. But it was incredibly hard to see that because when you cover gun violence, as long as I've covered gun violence or you've covered gun violence, you know in the back of your head that this might happen. And you hope it doesn't, man. You really hope. You hope and pray and you know that it doesn't. And I always, you know, I'd walk away from these stories going like, you know, I'm not really a religious person. I'm not spiritual, but whatever. God, uppercase, lowercase, whatever. I'd be like, please, God, like, don't let anything happen to this kid. Please.
This was the kid. You were the,
Well, he's one of the, I have like a handful that I'm telling you that it will break me, right?
Yeah.
And he was one of the ones that I was just rooting for. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. He just had a baby. And he
it just seems like it shouldn't happen.
No.
And it's one of the most tragic stories I've read. It just seems like, why should this happen multiple times to somebody like this? And they escape it. Hurt, but escaped and made it out with their life, and then it hits them again.
And that's why, while people look at me like, oh, look at her being a hater, why, you know, like, why when we're saying, oh, our numbers are down, and they are, and that's great. and, oh, like, you know, the shootings, homicides are down, and look, we have all these programs and all that. I can never sort of give up on telling those stories because I know how many families are, like, dealing with this. It's, like, way beyond the numbers. It's, like, it doesn't matter if you get to, you know, now this family has this added layer of trauma.
And you talked about the numbers. We're in this place, too, where the numbers are low.
They are.
But people are still dying.
Yes, they are.
And people are still getting shot. What do you think the city did right to get us to this place, even though there is a lot more work to do? Yeah. I mean, do you think that something happened?
You know what? I don't know exactly what went right. And I think anyone telling you, oh, this is the formula that worked, I would go out on a limb and be like, nah, I'm not really buying it. I don't think any of us really knows what exactly worked. It was a whole bunch of different things, right? It was 10 things, 100 things. It was timing. It was post-COVID. It's a bazillion different things, right? But I'm glad that we're here and that's great. But one of the things that I've been screaming about and that I was like, you know, hoping that before I walked away that we would do, and we have not done, even though our numbers are great, and it's part of the reason why we can't really pinpoint ABC works, so we're going to do ABC, right? Yep. It's because we have yet to really evaluate the programs in this city that we keep throwing money to, which is like, I'm not suggesting we should take money away from programs or people. I'm saying let's evaluate every single thing so we know what needs to be tweaked, maybe something that maybe is not working and shouldn't be funded anymore. And people will tell me, well, we've evaluated these 10 or those 20. No, my friend, evaluate every single one, period.
Yeah, and that would be your prescription to the Parker administration.
Yeah.
Figure that out.
Figure it out.
So I wanted to ask you as we get ready to wrap up,
sure.
You know, if there's a message you wanted to give to the city, to the people who followed you, who read your work, who've admired that voice, that little edge, who probably was mad at you but happy, what would you say? Especially because at the beginning you thought they had the shrug.
Yeah.
You know, do they still have it?
We have days, you know, I'm going to keep it very real.
Keep it real.
There's many, many days where we still have the shrug, where we sort of like, that's our default, right? Because it's easy, it's comfortable where we do that. But I think then we rally and we're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, so I have seen, like, even if they do, it's the default shrug, you know, somebody's like, wait, this actually is not right. Like, let's do something about this. So I think we've gotten better. But I hope that we do that for one another, or Philadelphians do that, whether I'm here or somewhere else, is that when someone sort of goes to the default position of like, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, it is what it is. If somebody's like, nope, you know that used to be a really annoying New Yorkerican, can't remember her name, but yeah, she used to be like, no, we deserve better. So let's go and demand better. And I hope that that's what they keep doing.
That was Helen Ubinas, veteran columnist, formerly of the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can catch Studio 2 live Monday through Thursday at noon on 90.9 FM. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Coates. Al Banks engineered today's Studio 2 Extra. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for listening.